Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, live in the green space today. And when we are live in the green space, you can watch the show as well as listen as we stream live video at WNYC.org or on the WNYC Facebook page. We'll talk about the impeachment news now. We're at this weird moment right now, it seems to me, where the whole thing is both extremely dramatic but extremely predictable. Dramatic is that tonight and tomorrow, the House Judiciary Committee will be doing what's called the markup of the impeachment resolution that they unveiled yesterday. The people on both sides should be giving us high drama or at least high dudgeon from the House Judiciary Committee. Predictable, most people think, is that it will pass the committee on Thursday, it will pass the Democratic House next week, and then it will fail in the Republican Senate early next year. But what if something else happens? What if moderates come up with a censure but don't impeach resolution that could win a majority? Unlikely, but new reporting says a few people are proposing it. Or what if an even more direct smoking gun emerges about Trump shaking Ukraine down? Or what if John Bolton is right and Rudy Giuliani turns out to be a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up? He means blow everybody up politically, of course. But a parallel storyline right now to the official congressional proceedings is that Giuliani is doing what he considers a parallel investigation. It could turn out worse for Trump than for the Democrats. We don't know. So we'll talk about the Giuliani factor and more now, as joining us now in the green space here at WNYC, Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz, co-host of the WNYC and ProPublica podcast, Trump Inc., which generally follows the intersection between the Trump family business interests and the public interest. Their latest episode follows Donald Trump Jr. to Mongolia, believe it or not, and we'll get to that. Ilya also went to Ukraine himself on the tail of Giuliani in September. And yes, this is what they look like. Please welcome Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Meretz. And for those of you hearing the podcast version of this on Impeachment, a daily podcast, hello. And yes, we've got a live audience today. We do the show about once a month in the green space here in Lower Manhattan. And to the live radio audience, listeners, we invite your phone calls with your reactions to the impeachment resolution as the Democrats have now released it. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. If you're a Democrat, did they get it right? In your opinion, should they go broader? In your opinion, should they go slower? In your opinion, and get more evidence? 212-433-WNYC. If you read even just the op-ed page of the New York Times today by their own columnists and their own editorial board, opinions are divided on that. If you're a Republican, do you see this as a three-year witch hunt, as the president claims it is? Or that Trump did something wrong but not impeachable? Or are you like, I'm a conservative Republican, but he's over the line over and over again. Just get him out and get Mike Pence in there, for heaven's sake. Or if you're an independent, maybe undecided for 2020, does it matter to you whether these articles are narrow or broad? Speaker Pelosi seems to think it does matter in swing districts that they are narrow. 212-433-WNYC. For anyone, 212-433-9692, or raise your hands here in the green space and we'll come around with mics. Ilya, you were in Ukraine in September looking at Rudy Giuliani's contacts over there. Do you understand what he's looking for on this latest trip?
He seems to be working by the same playbook that he's been working off of all year, which is do what you're going to do in public. Tweet about it, be photographed doing it. So, you know, last week Rudy showed up in Kyiv. Apparently he did not let the Ukrainian government know that he was there. They found out from social media the same way anyone else did. And what was really interesting to me following some of the anti-corruption activists that I follow in Ukraine, is Rudy was meeting with former officials of the Party of Regions, Russia-aligned politicians, a lot of the same people who were in the Manafort fold when Paul Manafort was doing his work over there some years ago for a corrupt strongman, Viktor Yanukovych. Rudy's quite open about going to talk with those people, seeking information from those people. There have been a couple news reports that have come out from a conservative TV network called OANN, but I think Rudy has more. He has promised that he's getting more. It's just so striking to me that in this situation where you'd think all eyes are on him and he'd want to show that he is definitely not working with corrupt people, he seems to be going for precisely the people who have the worst reputation over there, at least in the eyes of the Americans who study the Ukrainian political scene the most closely.
So, for example, one of the people that you profiled in your story in October, who Rudy was dealing with in Ukraine, was the former prosecutor Yuri Lutsenko. And you wrote, Lutsenko once told a reporter that the U.S. ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, had given him a list of people we should not prosecute. And that, of course, surfaced in the smearing of Yovanovitch that she gave a list of people not to prosecute, like she was corrupt. He later acknowledged that he was the one who asked for such a list. You reported, can you explain that portion of the smearing of Marie Yovanovitch?
I mean, it's so strange. And Lutsenko has actually gone back and forth several times on this, making the whole thing just sort of like a big question mark, which maybe is having the desired effect, because it ends up being like, he said, she said, I don't know, who knows, it's all so crazy, they're so corrupt over there. What to me is actually sort of most disturbing about this moment is Ukraine still has a young president. President Zelensky met Vladimir Putin for the first time yesterday at an international summit. They're talking about the future of Russian-occupied eastern Ukraine. They're talking about a war that has killed 13,000 people in Ukraine. America had been Ukraine's most steadfast ally. That seems pretty much to be falling apart. And yet, William Taylor, the charge d'affaires, effectively our ambassador over there, who testified so memorably in the House Intel hearings, is still the ambassador there. So it's this very unstable situation that I think even 3 months from now will start to look pretty different from where we are now.
Here's a version of the current Rudy story on the conservative-leaning website The Hill. It says, Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's personal attorney, said Monday that he expects to complete a report this week detailing his findings from his recent travels to Ukraine to counter the Democrats' impeachment inquiry. Then they have a quote of Giuliani from Steve Bannon's radio show, War Room Impeachment. He says, I was going to do an outline of it and try to present it at the convenience of the Republicans in Congress and the Attorney General at the end of the week. Giuliani added that his report on his findings should be completed by Wednesday, today, or tomorrow, but he was unsure when they would be made public. He also said he hoped to speak with Republicans before the House moved forward with, with articles of impeachment against Trump centered on the president's conduct toward Ukraine. So that from The Hill. So that would be a timeline of things that are right about to happen, Andrea, if true. Is there a Rudy factor that you expect to come into play in the House in the next week?
Well, I mean, let's not forget that two of Rudy Giuliani's close associates are indicted in the Southern District of New York, right here in Lower Manhattan, for business that they were doing in connection with Rudy Giuliani, and Rudy Giuliani's name has already come up in court in that case. And prosecutors said at the most recent court appearance, which I think was last week, that in fact there's going to be a superseding indictment. It's been widely reported that Rudy is being investigated by the Southern District. And I will say that I have spoken to a number of former federal prosecutors, including many from the Southern District, and not one of them believes that Rudy Giuliani is not in serious potential criminal trouble for his work in Ukraine. And there's even some speculation that the events of this week are in some ways him committing a crime in progress in front of everybody. So I also think it's really, really, really important to remember that the people that Giuliani is getting information are so widely believed to be corrupt that when we first started reporting on Rudy, we had an editorial discussion. Should we call these people corrupt prosecutors? But it turns out they are so widely believed and labeled thus by a bipartisan group of experts, that to not call them that is almost journalistic malpractice. One of them had a bug put on his fish tank because people believed that he fixed a case. Another one couldn't get a visa to the United States because people thought he was so corrupt. These are the people that Rudy Giuliani is gathering information from for this report. One other thing, Rudy Giuliani has said in the past he was going to be presenting a report. He said that about the Mueller report. He was gathering information. He's going to have a counter version. So,
and there never was one.
When we see it, we will review it.
And Ilya, you reported in the spring that Lutsenko, that is he one of the ones you call corrupt prosecutor?
Yeah.
Yes.
He told a reporter.
Not just us.
I get it. He told a reporter in the spring he would be happy to have a conversation about Hunter Biden with Attorney General William Barr. Then in September, he told the Los Angeles Times that he hadn't found any evidence against the Bidens and said he had told Giuliani that any investigation should be conducted, quote, through prosecutors, not through presidents. So can you elaborate any more on that or on Lutsenko's flip-flopping on the Bidens?
Lutsenko, I mean, what we need to do in each of these cases is evaluate that particular corrupt prosecutor's motives. So Lutsenko, at the beginning of the year, was the general prosecutor of Ukraine, had this high-profile, important job that, you know, could be exploited in all kinds of ways, potentially. And he wanted to hang on to that job after Volodymyr Zelensky was elected the president of Ukraine. So he wanted to show, we think, closeness to the Trump administration, influence with the Trump administration. And, by the way, he wanted to get rid of that pesky ambassador, Marie Yovanovitch, who kept criticizing him. He made his attempt. It failed. Zelensky did not keep him on as the general prosecutor. But it did potentially succeed insofar as Marie Yovanovitch was removed from office.
Andrea, Republicans in these hearings defend Trump at every turn, but they don't defend Rudy. Why do they draw the line there? And do you think that, citing John Bolton, Rudy could still be a hand grenade who's going to blow everybody up, quote unquote? In other words, could he wind up hurting Trump in this impeachment process, which seems like it's following a predetermined script so far?
Well, I mean, I think he already has done a considerable amount of damage. I mean, obviously, it's Rudy Giuliani's actions that brought us to this moment. The potential of a criminal case is another thing that's hanging out there. Look what happened when President Trump's other former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, was indicted. There were a lot of, and is now serving prison time, there were a lot of consequences to that. I think it's worth pausing for a moment to reflect on the sort of tragic arc of Rudy Giuliani's career. I mean, he was, as you know, I wrote a book, it's coming out next month. It's called American Oligarchs. And one of the things I look at is Rudy Giuliani's early career, and he was a genuine corruption fighter. He was somebody who was so convinced that corruption was corrosive that he not only made the case against people, but he made the case that corruption hurts the body politic. And we have gone all the way from that to a 180-degree turn, where he is now speaking to people who are admitted that they invent cases. And that's what the president's personal attorney is doing.
You know, I just want to point out one more little moving piece, but it's really relevant today. The New York Times is reporting that Rudy Giuliani and his wife, soon to be ex-wife Judith Giuliani, have finalized an agreement on their divorce. So that's going to move outside of the court. They have settled on terms. And, you know, all through the summer, we'd been hearing little tidbits of information about Rudy's financial situation and all the money that he seems to be spending. He has a really expensive lifestyle while representing President Trump for free. It makes you ask whether President Trump is, in fact, the client or the product in this situation. And that question lingers.
Let's move to the articles of impeachment. We've all been hearing how narrow they are. Would it be accurate to say, Andrew, that the articles as written ignore any of the possible abuses that you've documented in Trump Inc. that pertain to your beat of the family businesses?
They really are narrowly focused. Now, I mean, When the Democrats took over in Congress last January, they mounted multiple investigations. So there is an investigation of the Emoluments Clause and whether the president is inappropriately taking gifts and things of value from foreign leaders. There is an investigation of his hotel. There are multiple requests for his tax returns. There's an investigation into money laundering and Trump's relationship with Deutsche Bank. All of that has been stymied in the courts, and there seems to have been a very deliberate decision. We are going to narrow this, and we are going to narrow it to the thing that is the most distilled, boiled down version. And those two articles of impeachment are sort of carrying everything else with them. But there is no specific resolution beyond the other congressional inquiries that have already been mounted and that are still, in fact, ongoing.
I'm going to read a few lines from the articles, and here you can see in the green space, this is the paper that they're printed on. It's really just a few pages, and it's abuse of power and it's obstruction of Congress. And on abuse of power, it says, using the powers of his high office, President Trump solicited the interference of a foreign government, Ukraine, in the 2020 United States presidential election. He did so through a scheme or course of conduct that included soliciting the government of Ukraine to publicly announce investigations that would benefit his reelection. And it goes on a little bit from there. And it says, President Trump used the powers of the presidency in a manner that compromised the national security of the United States. I'm going to come back to that. And undermined the integrity of the United States democratic process. He thus ignored and injured the interests of the nation. And then on the obstruction of Congress, basically it says, Donald J. Trump has directed the unprecedented, categorical, and indiscriminate defiance of subpoenas issued by the House of Representatives. And it's the indiscriminate defiance of subpoenas, not just, you know, abiding by some and challenging others in court, but the blanket indiscriminate defiance of subpoenas that they found impeachable. And, you know, there's more language, but there's really not a lot more content than that. And one big thing in there that I wonder if they needed to emphasize more, Ilya, is, or Andrew, you first, is the threat to national security.
You know, it's really, really interesting because the day that Nancy Pelosi announced the impeachment inquiry, Mikey Sherrill was on your show. And as I recall,
Congresswoman from the moderate district in New Jersey.
And she is a veteran. And she was saying that that is what did it for her, that there is a hot war between Ukraine and Russia, and that there was an allegation that the president was messing around with military aid for political purposes that brought her to the point of saying, yes, we have to join this inquiry.
Right. And but my question is, even though we hear it from the Democrats and we hear it from some of the witnesses in the Intelligence Committee hearings, the ambassadors and so forth, can the Democrats in prosecuting this case make the American people feel unsafe if they're talking about national security, and not just that the people of Ukraine are unsafe, which is more remote?
I think that is the sort of implication, that somebody who is a veteran thinks like, wow, this is actually serious. And it's not just about Ukrainians, it's because it's about Russia. It's the Ukrainians are our front line, as they see it, in this sort of keeping Russia back. So there's the Russian cyber war, and then there's the Russian actual shooting war that is going on, and the Ukrainians, tens of thousands of them, are dying. And I think that that is what is so frightening to some people, and I do think it is a resonant point and a point on which people are pausing. I also just want to mention that one of the things you didn't raise, and all of the things that are happening today, is the Inspector General, the Horowitz report on the FBI. And I was just reading it this morning, rereading the executive summary, and they were talking about the FBI agents being so alarmed that the Russians might be offering something to the Trump campaign. How far we have moved from that moment to what we are discussing is, was it wrong for the president to solicit foreign interference? That is big, big movement, and it says something about the state of our nation.
Right. But one of the reasons that the progress of this feels inevitable, unless something unexpected happens, is that the country is so divided on this, right? Most Americans feeling Trump has used the public office for private ends, but on removal, not enough of a majority to move many Republican senators. And the Fox News Trump base feels like Trump is the victim, not the perpetrator. And that base, you mentioned the Inspector General report, and I'll mention the reaction to it. That base runs all the way up to Attorney General William Barr, who framed the whole set of Russia and then Ukraine investigations like this yesterday on NBC.
I think our nation was turned on its head for 3 years. I think based on a completely bogus narrative that was largely fanned and hyped by an irresponsible press. And I think that there were gross abuses of FISA. An inexplicable behavior that is intolerable in the FBI.
So, Ilya, that's the Trump base position running all the way up to the Attorney General of the United States, a 3-year push based on flimsy suspicions and charges, and that the investigation itself was the abuse of power, not whatever they were looking into that Trump did.
Yes, you are correct. And I suppose it's reflective of the news and information environment that we operate in now, where you choose your information source and you go with what feels right to you. It's maybe not so striking that ordinary Americans who have like regular jobs will pick and choose what they want to hear. It is very striking to hear an Attorney General of the United States amplify what reputable sources have widely debunked. That's really striking.
And also juries. There's a jury that convicted Paul Manafort of the evidence. Paul Manafort was convicted in two jurisdictions. Many of President Trump's former aides, that including some of them that were raised in those initial FISA applications, have been convicted of crimes at this point. So, I mean, we were talking about Ukraine, and this is exactly what goes on in Ukraine, which is that all prosecutions are portrayed as subjective, and therefore it undermines the confidence of the populace. And one of the U.S. missions in Ukraine since, you know, for decades has been to reverse that, to say, no, there's a rule of law. There are things that can be proven in courts. And that is what Barr is sort of speaking against, but we still do have rule of law in this country.
We can take a few phone calls. People are calling to comment on the breadth or lack thereof of the articles of impeachment. Here in the green space, if you want to ask a question or say something, now's the time to raise your hand. We'll come around with the mic. But let's go to line 8, Art in Mountainside. You're on WNYC. Hi, Art.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call. I was a little upset that they went so narrow with it. I think that there's a lot of foregone conclusions. If barring anything big, we know this is going to fail in the Senate. I think it's very important that we hold the president accountable to everything that he's done. And I think Nancy Pelosi is kidding herself if she thinks that keeping it narrow is going to give any cover to Democrats who are in battleground state.
All right. Thank you very much. For a contrasting point of view, I think we're going to go to line 10, Ann in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Hi, Ann. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear just fine.
Hi. I just have a couple of comments about Nancy Pelosi. I think she is one of our best politicians and a very honest woman, very Christian woman. And I agree that with her, and I think we should stop second-guessing her motives. I think she knows what she's doing. I would also, can I say something else about her latest comments about hate?
Yep.
She was sincere. I was born and raised Catholic, and I was taught not only by the nuns, but by friends, that when you're angry with a person, when you really feel as if you've been bullied by them, the best defense is praying for them because it relieves you of the anger, the angst. And the third thing I want to say is about our very, very Catholic Attorney General. He should learn, or he should know, about lies of commission and lies of omission. And I think he is not a very honest man. And that's all I have to say.
And thank you very much for your call. Andrea, I'm going to ask you to put on your political analyst hat. You've been doing political analysis, at least of the New York area and also nationally. for a long time. This question about whether it helps the Democrats in swing districts to get reelected to keep the impeachment articles narrow. We did see Max Rose, Democratic congressman from Staten Island, which, you know, voted for Trump in the presidential election, then threw out a Republican congressman and elected Max Rose in 2018, argue over the weekend that he really wanted to see them narrow. So I guess there's at least some feeling among some swing district Democrats that this does help keep them safe.
Well, that has been the reporting, that they have made that quite clear to Nancy Pelosi, that they don't want it to go so broad. They do want it to be narrowly focused. I mean, look, we don't really understand how elections work anymore, so I think it's very hard to predict all of the forces at play. But there is an argument that an incredibly complex impeachment hearing is not helpful to anybody because then no one understands it. I mean, the Mueller report, I thought, was clear and gripping, but no one basically read it. I mean, a lot of people read it, but, you know, not a huge amount of the populace. People didn't really ingest it. And I think that is the calculation here. I mean, I will also say, you know, we at Trump Inc. have been looking at so many of these things, and you feel like your head explodes. You're looking at emoluments and Deutsche Bank and money laundering and taxes and trying to follow all the threads, and there are so many, and we are doing this professionally, that I do think that there is some rationale for not inflicting that giant hunt on the populace and say, instead, we're going to focus on these things that are going to sort of carry the weight of what we believe the evidence shows is the problem.
Here's another thing. One reason people think Trump is unfit for office is just the coarseness with which he approaches the job and with which he approaches the American people, and how he uses coarse language and coarse behavior to divide people for his private political ends. Here's an example from his rally in Pennsylvania last night.
Look how they've hurt people. They've destroyed the lives of people that were great people, that are still great people. Their lives have been destroyed by scum, okay? By scum.
So, Ilya, I guess we know by now that this is not a deal breaker for 40% or more of Americans, this kind of tone for the presidency.
I'm actually a little puzzled that I don't hear more discussion of the coarseness, because to me it continues to be very shocking. And I would expect that a lot of people would maybe not want their children hearing that kind of language, or themselves might recoil from that kind of language. But that's not really an argument that I hear very much. You know, what you read occasionally is that, you know, Republican members of Congress are troubled by the coarseness, and it sort of ends there. I suppose, you know, going to a top politician and saying, like, I don't like the way you, it seems sort of weak and mealy-mouthed. But it is potentially a vulnerability for him.
We have a question here in the green space. Hi.
Hi. I think there's a little bit of language in the statements about the impeachment about his patterns of behavior.
Yes.
Which is kind of what we're talking about here, and the narrowness and the width. But one thing I just keep feeling is whenever I hear the Republicans claim against the Democrats, oh, you've been after him for all these 3 years just to reverse the election, I want to hear people say, yes, and there's a reason for that, and an entire string of reasons for that, and to repeat the reasons for that, the emoluments, the taxes, the coarseness. You know, I want to hear people really speak out about how disgusting this person is. And
do you mean Democratic members of Congress?
Yes, and people in the press, and people among ourselves. I mean, let's remember what we really dislike about Donald J. Trump, who from the beginning has lied, manipulated, and continues in this fascistic way to manipulate through his constant rallies of people. You know, I mean, through the firing of we have barely a legitimate cabinet. They're all acting cabinet members. Why are we not reminding the American people of these gross infractions of public behavior?
I think on your first point particularly, the most striking thing to me in the articles of impeachment was the reference to the 2016 election and the soliciting of Russian interference. That's the only place where I see direct contact to the Mueller report. And that was really arresting and interesting to me because it goes to motive. It says this happened in 2016. It seems to be happening in 2019. And why should it not happen in the upcoming election? And that is troubling.
Yeah, I mean, I also think there's a way in which Trump's behavior, which sort of violates all the norms, then becomes his defense. So one of them is that he doesn't answer subpoenas. He stonewalls. He doesn't answer our questions. He gives very limited information about his business interests, about what he does. There are no visitor logs at the White House anymore, on and on and on. And obviously, most significantly in this investigation, has told key witnesses not to testify. And then that becomes a defense. Oh, well, you didn't hear from the key witnesses, so how can you proceed forward? I think similarly, it has always been a strategy of Trump's, going back to the campaign, to disrupt and burst and break so many rules of behavior that it becomes impossible to process them all. And what is now happening is because that has happened and people are having a response, Trump defenders are saying, oh, well, you've just been out to get him, without acknowledging that there have been many violations, certainly of norms by the Trump administration and of crimes by people around Trump.
We're over time, but I want to give just a little bit of air and love to your new episode, which is about Donald Trump Jr. in Ukraine. I'm sorry, in Mongolia. Controller room, I want to skip ahead to the clip of William Taylor. Now, this is not Ambassador William Taylor,
different
who
William
we saw
Taylor
in the Ukraine hearings, right?
Correct.
Do you want to set him up for us?
Sure. William Taylor is an anthrozoologist at the University of Colorado who was studying patterns of hunting in history in Western Mongolia when he found out that Don Jr. was in the neighborhood.
Context. Son of President Hunter.
Yes. Big Hunter.
Uses presidential connections to go somewhere and do something, and that is to go hunt this rare kind of sheep that's on the endangered list, though apparently what he did is legal. In Mongolia, you get a special permit.
Yeah, so shall I say what the story,
the crux of the story? Yeah.
So the crux of the story is Don Jr. went to Western Mongolia in last summer, and he Instagrammed it, and that was all public. But when we heard about this trip, and we heard that he had been hunting, which was not public, our reporters, Jake Pearson and Anand Timurtego in Ulaanbaatar, started to look into it. And we learned a number of things that really illuminate the peculiar position that the son of a U.S. president is in. So, for example, he got a permit to shoot an endangered sheep. He got the permit days after he shot the sheep. While he was there, he met with the president of Mongolia. That was not disclosed. His father had met with the president of Mongolia. The president had met with the president of Mongolia 3 or 4 weeks earlier than that. He was accompanied by a Mongolian delegation on this huge hunting trip that included cooks and guides and scouts and all kinds of, you know, 40 or 50 people. So it really looks like they rolled out the red carpet for him in a way that you wouldn't know if you just followed Don Jr. on Instagram, which I do.
And Mongolia wanted something from the United States and still does, which has to do with lowering tariffs on Mongolian
cashmere.
So this William Taylor is a what kind of zoologist again?
He is an anthrozoologist. So he studies the history of hunting and is himself a hunter.
I'm a hunter. I teach hunter education. I go to Montana every year and hunt deer, sometimes elk. And I have nothing ethically against hunting. I also research it, right? It's really important in my life, but I think it needs to be done in balance, right? And I have an issue with the way that this seems to have played out. And it makes me incredibly upset to sit there and to look through the remains of centuries or millennia of sustainable hunting right alongside an extreme example of unsustainable hunting that I don't know if Mongolia is really going to ultimately recover from. It's really upsetting. And yeah, it really bothers me.
Part of our new series, Lovable William Taylors in the News. Ilya, in our last 30 seconds, you're actually asking for the public's help on this, right?
Yeah, there's so much that we want to learn. We would like to know the circumstances of Don Jr.'s visit with the president of Mongolia. If you know anything about that, what was discussed, where they met, how they met, please tell us. We also want to know what happened with the sheep that he shot. Usually trophy hunters import what they shot in that other country. So if he's brought it home to the United States, we want to know about it. We haven't been able to get answers so far.
And just real briefly, why do we care again?
Well, it's a threatened species. The numbers are in steep, steep decline. And our Endangered Species Act, I learned this reporting this story, our Endangered Species Act covers species that are not native to the United States as well. It cares about the world's species. So when a foreign country says, hey, come shoot our animals, son of the U.S. president, that could collide with American law.
While we want a trade deal.
We want to know, was there something that the Mongolians wanted and were concurrently giving things to Don Jr.?
Please thank the co-hosts of Trump, Inc., Ilya Marritz, and Andrea Bernstein.
Thank you.
Thank you.